about God and God's relationship with man. You've been passing judgment on others. Well, do you not think that God will judge you if you're not keeping His law? You think about the kindness and the righteousness of God. You think about God in verse 5, in the end, storing up His wrath for those who would turn away from Him. And then kind of a very crucial point in verse 11, that there is no partiality with God. Taking all these things that the Jews knew to be true because it was found in the law itself, and Paul is turning this on them to say, here's why you too are in need of the gospel. Because there's no partiality with God, and you found yourself straying from the truth of God. So that's where we are so far. Any questions? Can I clarify anything? All right. Someone turn to Exodus chapter 19 and read verses 4 through 6 for me real fast. Exodus 19, 4 through 6. Brian, you there? Oh, dear. You were looking up here. See, Katie, see, you didn't look that time, did you? So, are you there now? All right. Did the Jews not have a reason to believe that they were a favored people? Sure they did. They had every reason to believe that they were a favored people. God had chosen them. God had spoken to them. God had even given them this law. Paul kind of begins to address that idea now. Takes it not only to the Jews who had known that they were wrong and that God, who is impartial, would judge them if they were ever wrong, but he's looking at their notion of being a favored people. So he begins in verse 17. If you bear the name Jew, let's pause on that for just a minute. You don't read the name Jew in the Old Testament. I think there's a couple of times in the latter prophets where you find that term. Where does the name Jew come from? Judah, okay? And of course, Judah was the fourth son of Leah. This is the son that God had chosen in Genesis 49th chapter, that the ruler will not depart from the tribe of Judah. This is the tribe of David. And it's when the kingdom divides after Solomon that those two southern tribes, Judah and Benjamin, they're the only ones that remain in league with the descendants of Solomon. And they became known as Judah, and Jew became synonymous with that nation. Anybody know what the term Jew means? Leah named him Judah because she said, I will praise the Lord. Jew means praise. If you bear the name Jew, you could look at that in a few different ways. Maybe they thought of that monicum as we are the praised of God, or that our life and our nation is to give praise to God. It bears that idea. It begins with the idea of praise. If you bear the name Jew and rely upon the law and boast in God and know His will and approve the things that are essential being instructed out of the law and are confident that you yourselves are a guide to the blind, a light to those who are in darkness, a corrector of the foolish, a teacher of the immature, having in the law the embodiment of knowledge and of the truth. There's a lot to say in favor of these praised ones. But you can also kind of look at how Paul is assaulting their notion of what it meant to be the praised ones. You rely upon the law. He's not talking about, and we're going to get to this again as we've already talked about in chapter 2, Paul has no problem with keeping the will of God. But you rely upon the fact that you received the law of God, therefore you are the praised ones of God. You only can be the praised ones of God. You boast in God. Well, look, is it a wrong thing to boast in God? I would hope not. But it is wrong if you're selecting yourselves as because we are the people of the law and we boast in God and He's not available to you. He's our God. He's our national God. He's the God of the law. You boast in God. You know His will. Nothing wrong with that. You prove the things that are instructed, or that are essential rather, because you're instructed the law, and you're confident that because of that, you are equipped to be a guide to the blind and lead others out of darkness. There may be a little bit of reference to the messianic prophecy found in Isaiah chapter 42, where it was said of the coming servant that he'd give sight to the blind, that he would bring the captives out of darkness, and that maybe the Jews had viewed themselves as this is what we're going to do, because again, we're the people of the law. We're God's people. We're the praised ones. Well, God had certainly blessed them. God had certainly favored them, if you will. But there's a problem. 21 through 23. John, would you read that for us? Yes, sir.
You therefore who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that one shall not steal, do you steal? You who say that one should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who oppose the law, do you abhor the law? Do you dishonor God? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you, just as it's written.
Okay. When we think about how Jewish Christians in particular had sought to impose Judaism on Gentile Christians, circumcision, as we're going to get into in the next few verses, was one of the big things. Ceremonial law, if you will, various aspects of it. When Paul is confronting them about you who are teaching others, do you not teach yourself? He has nothing to do with any kind of outward sign, outward mark, any kind of ceremony. Those three things that he mentions, where are those things condemned by God? You who steal, you who commit adultery, you who, and you may have to think for a minute about robbing idols' temple, that may have to do with idolatry, that may have to do with another way of dishonoring God. Where do you find those three principles? Ten Commandments. You boast in the fact that God is your God. You've got the law. Okay, well, let's start with the elementary principles of the law. Why are you violating these? Now, how is it that a typical or someone that Paul has in mind would have violated these things? I mean, theft is a problem in any culture. Adultery is a problem in any culture. Robbing idols' temples may be another matter. There's a way you can look at this, though, in looking at their fundamental relationship with God. How is it that a Jew could be guilty of stealing from God? Or maybe we think in the words, in the terms of Malachi, you know, you offer to me that which is blind and lame. You could also think of some ways in which Jesus rebuked the Pharisees and how they had taught the law. You remember, it was commanded that thou shalt honor thy father and mother, but they had taught, well, anything that we have declared Corban dedicated to God, well, we can't give that. Well, that's robbing from your parents, and in that sense, you're robbing from God. How is it that the Jews could have been guilty of adultery against God? Worshipping anything else but God. And in their case, we certainly know in the Old Testament, idolatry itself was an issue. In their case, it may have been this perverted notion of the law, and that the law is really what makes us special. Well, you're sacrificing your relationship with God then. Robbing idols' temples, that may again be the idea It could be idolatrous practices, again, being mixed in. I have a notion, though, it is not giving to God what God deserved. Robbing, not robbing an idol's temple, robbing God's temple. That's my thinking on this anyway. Okay? You do all these things. Whatever it is that Paul's getting at, you're guilty of all these things. And yet you boast that we're the people of the law. We're God's special people. We're the praised ones. And what does Paul say is happening because of their conduct and behavior? What's happening to God's name? It's being blasphemed. That quotation is found in Isaiah 52 in verse 5. In that context, it was the prophet looking at the subsequent captivity of God's people because God's people had transgressed God's will so much. What happened to God's name when God's people were taken captive by other peoples? Remember, the Babylonians and the Assyrians, they looked at warfare as a battle between the gods. Well, here is Jehovah, God's people. We just conquered them. Jehovah must not be very powerful. And God's saying, this is happening because of how wicked you are. My name's being blasphemed now. Well, Paul says to this audience, and here you are, you boast in that God's our God. You boast in the fact that we have the law, but you're not following it. And therefore, the name of God is being blasphemed among the Gentiles. What does Jesus say in Matthew 5 and verse 16 is the purpose of our walk? Anybody remember that one? Why we're supposed to be the light set on a hill, that men may see your and glorify your Father who is in heaven. That's the purpose of our works, if you will. That's the purpose of our obedience, following the ways of God. Because otherwise, if we're just like the rest of the world, we may rail at the world as the Jews had done. We may boast with a false assurance, well, we're the church, we're the people of God. God's got to be happy with us. But if we're living just like the rest of the world, then guess what happens in the name of God? The name of God is blasphemed among the world. Okay. Any questions, comments? All right, continuing on. Paul moves on to look at one particular aspect of the law. And again, don't just see that as obeying commandments. It's the fact that they were given the law. They were given this law from God that distinguished them. A prominent aspect of that was circumcision, something that actually came before the law, but was certainly emphasized in the law as well. For indeed, he says in verse 25, circumcision is of value if you practice the law. But if you're a transgressor of the law, your circumcision has become uncircumcision. Why was circumcision such a big deal to the Jews? Where did it originate? All the way back in Abraham. Genesis 17. Circumcision was one means which God had sought to comfort and to assure Abraham. Remember, it's in Genesis 17 that Abraham is very worried that this promised child has not come. He's begging with God, oh, that Ishmael may stand before you. Well, God has said, no, you're my chosen one and you're going to have a son, and this is going to be the sign that you belong to me and all future generations belong to me. Circumcision. And again, that was emphasized in the law. Paul says circumcision's great. That sounds weird. Circumcision, there's no... let me get back on track here. It's of great value if you practice the law. Being marked as one of the followers of God is fantastic if you'll follow God. Even in the Old Testament, though, Deuteronomy 10, verse 16. Someone look over in Deuteronomy 10, verse 16, and then someone else, Jeremiah 4 and verse 4. Deuteronomy 10, verse 16, Jeremiah 4 and verse 4. Joe, you got one of those? You got Jeremiah. Who's got Deuteronomy? Charlie? Deuteronomy 10, verse 16.
Therefore, circumcise the foreskin of your heart and be stiff-necked no longer.
Okay. Jeremiah 4, 4. Okay, Deuteronomy is before the people are even brought into the land. They haven't even received the promised land yet. And already God's saying, give your heart to me. Let me put my mark there. Jeremiah is 700, more like 800 years later. And now God's people are going into captivity. And God's saying, I still need to put my mark where it really belongs. These were a circumcised people. They had God's mark. But they hadn't given their hearts to God. This has always been God's will. I'm not just interested in some fleshly designation that you're my people. No, I want you to give your hearts to me. Let me put my mark there. Paul's saying the same thing to these people. Yeah, circumcision, fine. Be marked as a child of God. And that's of great value if you follow Him. But it's of no value. It says absolutely no value if you won't follow Him, because that shows the mark isn't where it really belongs. It's not in your heart. So then he even turns his attention again to those who were outside of the law. And again, in chapter 2, Paul's not yet getting to the point where he is emphasizing here's how the gospel saves both. He's just making some points to one particular audience. He's already designated in chapter 1 the Gentiles were in need of God. Now he's got to get across to the Jewish Christians just how much they were in need of God too. So he says, you boast in all this, you boast in circumcision. Well, if an uncircumcised man keeps the requirements of the law, will not his uncircumcision be regarded as circumcision? Does he not show therefore in his heart that he's given himself to God? He absolutely does. And again, Paul's not looking at the Gentile world and saying that they had somehow kept the law of God perfectly. They hadn't either. We already know that. He's just making a point to the Jewish audience. You boast in a mark. You boast in the fact that God gave you a law, but you're not keeping it. What good is it then? If there were someone who hadn't received the fleshly mark of circumcision, but they keep the law of God, well, they show that they've given themselves to God. Yeah, John?
Do you think, as it refers to the law there, I know sometimes that can mean Jewish law, and it can mean law of God in general. Do you think when he's talking about the Gentiles there keeping the law, that is the law that they were under at the same time, parallel to the Jewish law?
Yeah, I think you go back earlier in chapter 2, verse 14, when the Gentiles who do not have the law, and I certainly read that as we're talking about the Mosaic law. They don't have the Mosaic law. However, they instinctively do the things of the law. So basic morality, their law to God, those are principles that are found in the Jewish law too. So those two ideas are there. I do tend to, in chapter 2, anytime law comes up, I have in my mind Mosaic law, because that's kind of Paul's purpose. But when it applies to the Gentiles, yeah, most Gentiles were not versed in the Mosaic law of God, but they knew principles. They knew morality. And if they did follow those things, it was showing a relationship with God. So, okay, verse 27 is making the same point again. He who is physically uncircumcised, if he keeps the law, will he not judge you? Who though having the letter of the law and circumcision are a transgressor of the law. And again, remember how Paul began this section. You who bear the name Jew, praise ones of God. Or, if you want to flip it around, those who praise God. Well, you could have been. You were chosen out as God's special people. You certainly could have been to the praise of God, but you haven't lived it. And again, it's an undertone throughout this chapter. Paul has absolutely no problem with keeping the will of God. There is no question that Paul emphasizes in this chapter, as he will in other parts of this book, the necessity of keeping the will of God. Now, he'll make the principle, yeah, that we can't do it on our own. We're not going to do it perfectly. The Jews hadn't done it perfectly. But the fault is not in trying to do the will of God. That's absolutely essential. But he's saying to the Jews here, okay, you boast in the fact God gave you law. God gave you circumcision. Well, here are other people that may be keeping part of the law better than you did. Are they not going to turn around and judge you? You've been judging them. Are they not going to turn around and judge you? Culminating in the final great point, which again is in some ways a restatement of Deuteronomy 10:16 and Jeremiah 4:4. He is not a Jew. And again, I think it's interesting. He doesn't say Israelite or of Israel. He says a Jew. Praised one. He is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, one who is praised of God, one who praises God, who is one inwardly. And circumcision is that which is of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the letter. And his praise is not from men, but from God. Remember what in the... Let me turn back here and make sure I get to the right place. Back in the prophet Ezekiel, in the 36th chapter of Ezekiel. Verses 25 through 27. The prophet, looking forward to the messianic period and the restoration of God's people, says of God that I'll sprinkle clean water on you and you'll be clean. I'll cleanse you from all your filthiness and from all your idols. Moreover, I'll give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. And I'll remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I'll put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you'll be careful to observe my ordinances. In similar fashion, back in Jeremiah, the 31st chapter, speaking of the new covenant. In Jeremiah chapter 31 and verses 31 through 33, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not like the covenant which I made with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, my covenant which they broke, although I was a husband to them. But this is the covenant which I will make with the house of Israel after those days. I will put my law within them, and on their heart I will write it, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. The messianic period was to be the period when people, God's people, are those who had finally given their hearts to God. Yes, sorry. Good point. I knew there was a couple of references. It's not in the early portion of Israel's history, but yes, as you get later, so I appreciate that. So, God has said, in the Messianic time, my people are going to be the people, not who are born of a nation, not who have received a physical mark, but the people are going to be the ones who have received my mark in their hearts. I'm going to give them new hearts. And again, as Paul is writing to Christians, he's trying to impress upon these Jewish Christians that that has happened now. That's who the people of God are. It's not just those who had law. It's not just those who had received an aspect of the law and circumcision. It's those who have now received the will of God in their hearts, those who have given their hearts to God. That's the true Jew. And as he concludes, or as we have it as a chapter, concludes a thought here. His praise is not from men, but from God. And so you kind of see that thought complete. You bear the name Jew. Why are you bearing that name and yet God's name is being blasphemed because of your conduct? The true people of God, though, the true people of God that receive His mark in their hearts, receive His Word in their hearts, they are now being praised by God. Yeah, Brian? That's absolutely. Pride, you know, national pride, even. It's a tricky thing. You look at in history how the Jews had kind of gotten to where they were by the time of Christ and the apostles. And it's not all bad. You look in the time of the Maccabees, and their way of life is being just abolished. Greek rulers have sought to absolutely destroy Judaism. And so the founders of the Pharisees, if you will, had a noble purpose to begin with. They said, "Nuh-uh, not us. We've made these mistakes before. We've turned from God before. We're not doing it again. We're going to follow God's law. And that law is going to distinguish us." And again, in how it originated, not necessarily a bad thing. Well, after a while, though, you can get just being proud in the fact that we're different. You know, we're the people of the law. And what that had turned into, instead of, you know, this is what's keeping us from transgressing the will of God and being like the nations, they had turned it into, and here's why the nations can't be people of God. And they weren't actually holding out salvation to the nations anymore. So, etc. Things can have noble beginnings, good beginnings, and they can kind of get twisted along the way. Mike?
You know, this section alone, I think, is a lot of lessons that we can pull from this for us today. The idea of letting something so relatively superficial define you to such an extent that you ignore the rest of the will of God is not something that's uncommon anywhere. Instead of using the totality of the Word of God to really define who they are as a Christian. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, there's a lot of parallels.
That's the same point I believe Jesus was making to the Pharisees when he said, "You tithe of anise, mint, cumin, yet you neglect the weightier principles of the law." What does he tell them? Do both. It wasn't a problem with the Pharisees were tithing. No, that's great, tithe. You neglected some other stuff. You let yourself be defined in how holy we are, and we're tithing even the smallest things to God. Well, be holy in your heart. Be holy in justice and mercy and all those things. So yeah, that's a temptation throughout time and for all people. All right, any other questions or comments on 2, Brian? Anytime my first reliance is on here is what my people do, as opposed to this is what I know my God wants me to do, that's a problem. That's why we're constantly, you know, a point's been made. I don't know if we'll get into chapter 3 or not. Church history is a funny thing. Church history has movements that have noble beginnings. I would look at the Reformation and say there's some noble beginnings to the Reformation. If you're trying to get away from a very much works-minded mentality in the Catholic Church of Luther, and yet Luther will emphasize faith much more than the typical priest would at that time. Well, that's not a bad thing. Movements kind of grind to a halt, though, sometime along the way. The Restoration Movement, same principle. There were some principles that I still, you know, just absolutely, yes, that's what it's got to be about. This whole notion of book, chapter, and verse, or, you know, only following the will of God, that's a principle that's got to be found any time. What we're warring against is, do we get ground to a halt? And we, so we've defined now, here's what we're supposed to be. Well, if we get set to a point where we've defined what we're supposed to be, then we may have missed something. And we're not just relying on, what did God say about that? That's why we're constantly going back, and things get, you know, if you want to know whether it's changes over time, it's because we're constantly going back. We're trying to say, well, is that really what God was saying, or is this what God was saying? And we're looking at that, and we're studying that, and we're trying as best we can by the grace of God to come to know His will and to do His will. So that's why you can't just, you know, say, you know, the church of the 60s had it right. Yeah, they had a lot of stuff right. But maybe not everything. And the church of 2016, university, we've got it right. Well, I hope we've got a lot of stuff right. And we're trying our best. But come 5 years from now, maybe we'll look back and say, well, you know what, we were a little off on that one. But that's constantly going back to the Word of God. That principle has to be there. All right. Real quick in chapter 3 then. I'll give you the overview of the first 8 verses, and then we might, again, if you were going to be here Sunday and Wednesday, Brother Owen is going to take you through a quick study of Galatians and making some comparisons between what Paul is saying here in Romans and Galatians. So we'll pick up in Romans again a week from this Sunday. It'll be January 1st. Okay. So Paul has just made this point of, again, all right, there's the first bell. So the true Jew is the one who's marked in his heart. It's not a nationality. It's not a group of people that were given a law. It's not a group of people that received circumcision. It's those who have it in their heart and are following the will of God. But he's going back again. He's sensitive to the mindset. He once had the mindset. He's sensitive to these people. He wants these people to follow God. So he goes back and addresses, do you mean there's no advantage to them? Well, sure they do. What advantage has the Jew, or what is the benefit of circumcision? Great in every respect. Paul's not, you know, just rejecting his heritage. God chose this people, and he chose them for a reason. And there were times in their history where they honored God. Sadly, there were many times when they did not honor God. But yet, they had some built-in advantages. Paul says, first of all, they were entrusted with the oracles of God. I find it interesting, Paul does not say they were entrusted with the law. He says they were entrusted with the oracles of God. Now, for many of the Jews, the law was found in Genesis through Deuteronomy. But the oracles of God, that includes anything and everything that God said. Including, by the way, those prophecies that we looked at in our first study from Isaiah 49 and other passages like it, where God said, my people one day are not going to be just from the tribe of Judah, but from all nations. Now the Jews had this knowledge. They were even entrusted with this knowledge. What's the basis of our word entrusted? Trust. In that language, pisteo, faith. They were entrusted with the oracles of God. They had that advantage. Had the Jews been faithful, though, in keeping those oracles of God? That was a problem. So they had some built-in benefits, and while they've already... Is that the first or second bell? That's what I thought, but they're already lined up. You know what? I'm not going to try to go any further. We're just going to start in chapter 3 when we get back a week from Sunday anyway. Thank you, everybody.